Without objection, I'd like to move back up the daily order of business to message from the Senate and to read a report of some standing committee reports. Will the clerk please read any message from the Senate?
I have two messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker. Nels A. Anderson was sworn in as a senator of the Alaska Senate March 3, 1982, in accordance with AS 1540-330 for the balance of the second session of the 12th Legislature, signed Jalmer Kurtula, President of the Senate. Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed the following, and they're transmitted for consideration. Senate Joint Resolution Number 53, amended, title, by Ferguson, requesting the National Park Service to improve an old mining road through the north addition to Denali National Park and Preserve and to extend the road to the Denali Park Road at Wonder Lake, Kantishna.
I'm going to refer that to the Transportation Committee.
The Senate has also passed committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 167, Rules, amended by the Rules Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Election Campaigns and to the Composition and Responsibilities of the Alaska Public Offices Commission and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs Committee and the Judiciary Committee.
Those are all the messages from the Senate.
Other communications?
I have a communication, Mr. Speaker, from the Alaska Power Authority. In accordance with AS 4483-200, the attached independent audit of the Alaska Power Authority is submitted, which details expenditures and receipts for the 12-month period ending June 30, 1981. This has been distributed to all members. Those are all the communications.
Reports of standing committees.
The State Affairs Committee has had House Bill 868, an act lapsing the appropriation to the Silver Anniversary Commission and providing for an effective date, under consideration, and the committee reports it back without recommendation. There is a letter of intent attached to the report, and that will be published in supplement number 20. The report was signed by Metcalf Chairman Miller and Brown, who all signed no recommendation. Fanning and Abood signed do pass. There's a further referral to finance. Those are all the committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, could we revert to introductions, please?
Without objection, we're back to introduction of guests.
I would like to introduce in Gallery B, Dr. John Devins, the President of Prince William Sound Community College, and particularly his daughter, Jerry, whom I had as a debate student for 2 years.
Before the recess, we had before us a motion to move from third to second reading a bill which was before us in third reading under reconsideration, and that being Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended in the House, to be moved back for the purpose of a specific amendment, Amendment Number 3. Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring to the body a question of parliamentary procedure.
State your question, Representative Abood.
The question is, are we in violation of Rule 4028 of Mason's Manual, page 282, regarding the question of germaneness? I believe, Mr. Speaker, you have on your desk a decision from, or an opinion of, the Barrier Bunch. It will spell this out fairly well.
Representative Abood, before the recess, you raised a point of order, I believe it was a point of order, regarding the germaneness of Amendment Number 3, which is the amendment before us should we advance from third to second reading. And during the recess, I did have an opportunity to research an opinion from Billy Barrier, our legislative attorney, and also to get an opinion from him about the germaneness of the amendment before us, and I will read that to you. It's a three page opinion just received relating to House Bill 137 and the germaneness of the question of the proposed amendment. He says, in my opinion, changes in oil and gas taxes are not relevant, appropriate, and in a natural and logical sequence to refundable tax credits, the subject matter of the original bill. It is an independent new question. Therefore, in my opinion, the proposed amendment is not germane. But then Representative Abboud, he goes on to point out that the question of germaneness is not a question to be decided by the presiding officer, but it's a question to be decided by the body. Representative Abboud.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In that case, I would call for the question.
There is objection. Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 1977, this body had a bill before it called an act relating to taxation. And the bill started out with refunds for energy conservation. I was on staff at the time, and I was very interested in the bill, and as a staffer had worked on the bill. And when it came back to the House from the Senate, it had provisions in it for a tax increase on the oil business, a tax break affecting the North Slope borough, five or six other tax provisions. Mr. Speaker, that bill passed the House and was signed by the governor and became law. It was then challenged in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court found that it did not violate the single subject rule. It did not, that there was no problem if the bill dealt with taxation, that there was no problem with having such a broad title. Now, the question perhaps might be whether this amendment, if replaced and also amending the title, might be germane. And, Mr. Speaker, based on that Supreme Court decision, it would be my opinion that it would be germane with that amendment to the title. And so I'd like to ask for an at ease, please.
Object.
Before the House stands at ease, I'm going to place a call on the House. If the Sergeant of Arms will instruct the pages to find the absent members.
Sir.
And the House, please stand at ease. Please come back to order. Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Upon a motion to recess, there'll be a Democratic caucus in the Buttrovich room.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also, upon a motion to recess, there will be a Republican coalition, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian.
Almost got me,
that's right. There will be a majority coalition in the Speaker's chambers.
We are, I want to remind the members that the House is under call. However, we'll extend the call of the House to the first and second floors. Representative
Brown. Mr. Speaker, may I assume that means that you'll have a lengthy at ease rather than a recess?
Yes, that's correct. A lengthy at ease rather than a recess. Representative Hofford.
The House stand at ease, please.
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? House, please come back to order. Representative Abboud.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I remove my question of germaneness.
Thank you, Representative Abboud. Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At present, I'm against this questionable amendment. But perhaps if this was brought up at a different time, that perhaps I would support this in relation to our declining state revenues. Because of the fact that I would like to look at some other alternative funding to help with this. But perhaps at a different time, I would backtrack and look at this particular amendment. And at this time, Mr. Speaker, I'm against this amendment.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, there have been quite a few criticisms leveled at this amendment, which is normal for any bill or amendment on the topic of taxation as the main bill is here. I think while I don't agree with a lot of the criticisms of the bill that relate to whether this is a good policy and whether we need these revenues and whether this is a good mechanism, I do agree with the criticism that this is a complicated issue and probably not something that should be normally adopted as an amendment by this body. It, on the other hand, it is something that did receive a lot of committee work and consideration by members of both the majority and the minority last year, and it was one of the alternatives that was pretty thoroughly examined and at the time seemed one of the alternatives that best met all the goals at that time, and many of those goals of fiscal stability and protecting ourselves in court, which we are still unprotected for some $2 billion worth of liability. I think those goals are still valid. I think I also agree with the criticism that this isn't the only way to accomplish revenue stability and to take care of some of the shortfalls and to get at the problem of the fact that this bill ended up costing the state of Alaska a lot more than what the members of this body thought at the time they voted for it. So in light of those criticisms that I do agree with, I would like to withdraw the amendment and hope that this issue in general will be considered by the body, and certainly I want to reserve the right to bring this up in some format.
Representative Rogers, Gardner, I believe that the proper thing to do would be to withdraw your motion to advance from third to second reading.
Speaker, sorry about that. Speaker, this time I'd like to withdraw the my motion to return to second reading for purpose of specific amendment.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This brings the question back before us of the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended in the House, is before us in third reading under reconsideration. Representative Brown.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent we return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment. There's one that's been passed out on the members' desks.
Object.
There is objection.
I believe the clerk has the amendment.
Would the clerk please read the amendment? And it is being passed out at the same time.
Amendment.
The amendment number four.
Amendment number four by Brown. Page 1, line 11. The following material is added. Section 3 AS 4320036J, a corporation may not take a deduction for campaign contributions.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment would address what I think is a somewhat ridiculous anomaly in current law, and that is that at the present time, corporations take as business deductions or as business expenses in their tax returns, among many other things, the campaign contributions they make. And Mr. Speaker, under Alaskan law, corporations can make contributions to candidates. I think that if the interest and the concern of the proponents of this bill are to make sure that we do not have some kind of state subsidy of political campaigns, then this amendment goes the last step further in that direction to get rid of those subsidies, and that is that it actually does away with the indirect subsidies available to corporations under 4320. I think that the amendment should be seriously considered, and I urge the members to pass it. The current situation when a corporation does this sort of thing, I think, is ludicrous. If we're to buy the arguments that we heard earlier this morning from the majority leader, that as a matter of public policy, we should not have the public treasury involved in political contributions.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I think this amendment may be consistent with the initial intent of the bill. I'd like an at ease to take a look at the statutes.
House, please stand at ease. I'd like to come back to order momentarily so that I can lift the call. Some members have teleconferences going down the hall. Somebody has to make a speech. And if we run short here or we get too many people off the floor, I can call the House again. So at this time, I'd like to lift the call. And Representative Halford?
Mr. Speaker, I did obtain a copy of the statute. And under 4320.013, it's individual tax credit. This amendment deals with not credits but deductions. There's a substantial difference. I don't know what is allowed in terms of deductions for contributions by corporations, but those things where a credit basically pays the entire amount back to the individual. A deduction allows that be taken out of a gross income before net income is determined for taxes. The result of that is the amount of benefit from a deduction is directly proportional to the tax rate and is always substantially less than a credit. But again, I don't know what is allowed in terms of credits. I don't know how this applies to whether it has any application to federal law or whether it only applies to state law, whether it may apply to state law under one chapter, not another chapter. There's a number of questions that I would hope the sponsor of the amendment may be able to answer.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, answer some of those questions. The Majority Leader is correct that deduction isn't the same as a credit. It's much nicer to have a credit because it's a one-to-one in terms of what you owe. But the deal on a deduction is you have to remember it's based on what your tax rate is, and if your corporate rate is only 9 or 10% or whatever it happens to be, then your deduction is only worth that percentage. But if you happen to claim $20,000 worth of deductions, it would add up. We're not talking about the person being limited to only claiming $100 as a deduction. A corporation can claim whatever it did to as many candidates or as many causes as it does. Now, the question is here about what is claimable. Is the best information that I have and others I talk to that the corporations are doing this and are eligible under the way they are doing this. There is, they are eligible to do this in the way that they're doing it. Now, how much they're doing, I don't know, because of course this is not open to public scrutiny. I can't go over and get a particular corporate income tax form and find out what they're claiming as deductions and what are not. Now, there may be corporations, and I suspect there are, which are not doing this, and certainly this will not prohibit them from doing anything that they aren't. But I think as a matter of public policy that they, if we're going to pass this bill, they certainly shouldn't be able to claim this as a deduction. And a private individual can claim a limited deduction for political contributions under federal law. But a corporation could claim a lot more than that and would be likely to because they could donate to a lot of citizens. But I think that the sponsor of the amendment is correct that if we're going to pass this bill, this would show some amount of consistency on our part. It's not a credit, but they're still getting a reduction in their taxes due to the government because they're making contributions to political candidates.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. During the at ease, it was also asked of me, well, where's the authority now for corporations to claim this kind of deduction? My understanding, Mr. Speaker, is that authority comes just from general provisions with regard to business expense type deductions. I mean, there's not a particular section of Alaska statutes that is allowing them to do this. They're doing it under that catch-all phrase, and it is being allowed. and it is a common practice. And, of course, it is quite different from a credit, and the circumstances are quite a bit different. But, Mr. Speaker, we could have a situation where a corporation may be giving many contributions of up to $1,000 each to individual candidates, which is quite legal in Alaska, and have part of that subsidized on from the state treasury as a result of the way the current practice and the current law works. I think that the amendment is a clean one. It is consistent with the bill, and I urge the members to go back to second reading so that we can consider it.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I said that I would consider this amendment and try and understand it through the how it applied to the statutes. I really still don't understand it. Federal law prohibits corporate contributions. I don't know what state law does. I know that if it's allowed, I can't see that it would be allowed under federal contributions. If corporate contributions are prohibited to federal candidates, then I can't understand how it's available in the federal tax law. I don't know that anybody can tell me that it is specifically available and being used and how it's being used in state law. Without knowing those things, I can't support the amendment, although I think the concept may have some merit.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, there are two different law areas of law you're dealing with here. One of them is what is or is not legal with regard to just the way in which the election laws are written at the federal and state level. My understanding of federal law in that area is that corporations cannot contribute to federal candidates, United States Congress, United States Senate, and U.S. President, although we all know how they have through front groups like political action committees and so forth. Under state law, with regard to a state candidate, somebody running for the state legislature or lieutenant governor or governor, Alaskan corporations are not forbidden from contributing to candidates in Alaska. Since that is not against the law, that is a business activity they carry on, they then consider it to be a business expense. Since it is then a business expense that no one has said is contrary to public policy, it is allowed as a deduction, as in the same way that any other business expense would be, and that's the practice we're talking about. We do have that information. That is the case. I don't think that there's any problem of having to get any more information about the amendment. I think the amendment's a clean one, and we should go back to second reading.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It appears that there might be some confusion as to whether or not corporations can make contributions and claim a deduction. If we pass this amendment, there won't be any confusion.
Representative Hurlburt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the interest of saving time, I'm going to speak for both Russ and myself. We favor this.
Representative O'Connell, you wish the floor? House, please stand at ease. Representative Hofford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just spoke with a corporate accountant in Anchorage. Political contributions by corporations are treated as a non-deductible expense. And he said basically federal law governs unless state law has a specific provision that allows it. As the minority leader has said, there's no specific provision in state law that allows it, and federal law does prohibit it.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I disagree. I think it depends upon who your accountant is and who's preparing your tax return and what you think the behavior is going to be if you're audited. It's a pretty rubber area, and in fact, our information is that this is a current practice. Maybe if every tax return were audited, maybe the prediction of the gentleman that was contacted by the majority leader about the law would be found to be correct, but every tax return is not audited. I'd like to just put it plainly on the lid, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, one other thing that hadn't been discussed is a possibility of an in-kind contribution. Sometimes people give money, other times they'll give other things that might be worth money. So I think that the minority leader is absolutely correct. This certainly can't hurt anything, and it would sure make it clear to anybody that had a doubt about it. I think it's worthwhile to do it.
Is there further debate? The question question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House, which is before us in third reading under reconsideration, be returned to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, amendment number 4. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 19 yeas, 15 nays.
So the motion to return to second reading has failed. We now have before us, in third reading under reconsideration, the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House. Is there debate? Representative Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we return to introduction of guests?
Without objection, we return to introduction of guests. Representative Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A is a former constituent of mine who now resides in the Juneau area. I did introduce her husband here a while back, but it does give me great pleasure to introduce a former constituent to Representatives Miller and Duncan, Mrs. Beverly Cruz.
House, please stand at ease. This time I'm going to place a call on the House on the reconsideration of the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House. And if there is no objection, we could continue, we could move on to the daily calendar while the call is being satisfied. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to bring up my notice of reconsideration on committee substitute for House Bill 683, Hess.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on Representative Rogers' reconsideration of House Bill 683, Hess. Will the clerk please read the bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 683, Hess, amended by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Term of Office for Members of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska.
Representative Rogers.
Speaker, I believe that's relating to the term of office for members and to the powers of the Board of Regents. That was amended.
That is correct, Representative Rogers. It was a title change, title amendment.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move that the House rescind its action in failure to return committee substitute for House Bill 683, Hess, amended to second reading for the purpose of rescinding the adoption of Amendment Number 1.
Object.
There is objection. Will the House please stand at ease? Representative Rogers, would you restate your motion?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House rescind its action in failure to return CSHB 683, Hess amended, to second reading for the purpose of rescinding the adoption of Amendment Number 1. Mr. Speaker, the effect of the motion, yesterday I made the motion to return to second reading to wipe out Amendment Number 1. That failed. This motion would rescind that action. If this passes, then the motion before us would be, shall we return to second reading? If that passes, then the motion before us will be on rescinding Amendment Number 1. So it takes 3 votes to get to Amendment Number 1. Mr. Speaker, I think it's worth it. Mr. Speaker, Amendment Number 1 wipes out the tuition waivers at the University of Alaska for its faculty. This has been a fringe benefit that has been offered to the faculty and staff of the university, much as private corporations offer continuing education as fringe benefits to their employees. It's part of a negotiated bargaining agreement which this legislature approved last year with the Community College Federation of Teachers. For those employees This legislature has approved the financial terms of that contract, which include this. The outpouring of public opinion messages I've received from Fairbanks, from faculty, from the classified staff, from all of the employees, this is a very important benefit to them. Several who have asked, who have been on opposite sides of the faculty unionization issue, say that this is the kind of thing that could most lead to unionization, the taking away of these kind of benefits, which are offered generally as a matter of course at other universities around the country. Mr. Speaker, it's not an expensive fringe benefit, but the elimination of this fringe benefit will be very expensive to the university and to the legislature. And for that reason, I would urge the members to vote yes on the rescinding motion.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hate to ask this question, but this isn't where I left off. I don't know what he's talking about. What are we talking about? The last thing I heard was to go back to second reading on this amendment of the minority leader. I don't know where we're at, and I'd like to have somebody explain it to me.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, while the member was not paying... Mr. Speaker, while the procedure has been that amendment was offered to go back to second reading on the previous bill, you called the House, Mr. Speaker, since not all members were present. I then brought up the reconsideration of this bill and have made a motion. So that's been the process.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, maybe a question through you to the sponsor of the motion. I have received a number of telegrams expressing concerns about our action on this amendment. The question would be, aren't those folks qualified for student loans that would provide the payment for the fees to attend those courses? Couldn't they take advantage of the student loan program? There were some pretty severe results that were suggested in telegrams that said my kids couldn't go to school and that sort of thing, and I thought that was the idea of the student loan program. And isn't that program available equally to the employees of the university?
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, in response, generally the tuition waivers are used for one or two courses taken by an individual who's working at the university, either taking a night course or whose work schedule allows them to take one or two courses during the day or during the week or an independent study. These people are not full-time students, so they're not eligible for the student loan program.
In order to get on track here, I'm going to make an attempt to restate the motion. And then I'm going to ask the clerk to read amendment number one, which the motion pertains to. I don't believe that's been read yet. But as I understand the motion, Representative Rogers has moved that the House rescind its action in failing to return committee substitute for House Bill 683 amended to second reading for the purpose of rescinding the adoption of amendment number one. Is that correct, Representative Rogers? That was the motion. Now, would the clerk please read amendment number one?
Amendment number one by Byrne to page one, line 26. Insert section 3, AS 1440-170A, is amended by adding a new paragraph to read. 7, not allow a special break for tuition fees and other fees, or allow a waiver for tuition fees and other fees for university employees.
That is amendment number one, which was before us on Monday. Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, so I can understand exactly what we're doing here, the university employees, some of the telegrams, some of the messages I've gotten, they're talking about their youngsters. Are they allowed under the present circumstances to have free tuition for their own children, or is it only for the employees themselves? I wonder if somebody could answer that question for me.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, my understanding is that one course per dependent is allowed under the tuition fee waivers. I'm pretty sure that's the current rule.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Moss.
Did I understand correctly a moment ago that this is part of a contract that they have with some of the employees?
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, that is correct. It is part of the contract with the members of the ACCFT bargaining unit.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before we got so generous in our loans, the professors and instructors would send their students to the institution at no cost. And it was a very good part of their package when they were poorly paid. But now that they have access to the student loans as well as anyone else, they're not deprived in any way, shape, or form from taking student loans. The problem developed this year, though, and as a matter of fact, is one legal case, and there perhaps will be two or three more legal cases in the misuse of the student loans, and at the same time, having freedom of the university system. So here they have a double-dipping situation, and I think one way to clean it up is to treat them equally like any other student or any other person who wants to go to the university. They can borrow from the student loan fund and not go free and still borrow at the student loan fund.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I think the member from Anchorage may have been rising before I did.
Representative Clarkson?
Well, the previous speaker apparently wasn't listening when I stood up and asked that very question. In fact, according to that answer, there is no double dipping because they are not eligible for the student loan program. I'm satisfied with the answer from the sponsor of the amendment. I am familiar with the student loan program. I am comfortable that that answer is accurate. I have no evidence of any abuse of that program, and I support the amendment.
The motion, excuse me.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, I support all three motions that will be before us in this complex parliamentary situation to get back to vote for the on the merits of this amendment. one of the reasons, in addition to the matters that I agree with the arguments on the merits that have been made here, is there's a good argument that the original amendment would put something into our statutes that's unconstitutional, that may involve an invasion of the privilege of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska to manage the business of the University of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, the legislature and the university, on a consent basis, agreed to partial dismissal of a lawsuit, a rather complex lawsuit that we had pending about a year and a half ago, I believe. The only part remaining, I think, involving trust lands, but everything else was taken out of that lawsuit. We agreed not to force the issue, so we would not be forcing the courts into deciding the question of where the regent's authority to manage the university stopped, and did that coincide with some kind of a line with regard to our constitutional authority to appropriate money. And I think that it would be a bad idea for us to raise that issue again, and with this amendment, it remains in the bill. I think that that issue will come up again. Mr. Speaker, I will vote any time I can to make sure that at least some people don't pay tuition at the University of Alaska. If I thought I could offer an amendment to this bill that would make sure that the regents could not put in a tuition, I think I cannot constitutionally, I would do it. Mr. Speaker, I attended the University of Alaska tuition-free. So did the governor of Alaska, the lieutenant governor of Alaska, and major leaders of the House and the Senate and the several commissioners I know. And I feel guilty every time I hear university officials defend the existence of a tuition at the University of Alaska based on some strange catch-22 about, well, this is otherwise we'll have problems with federal money or something like that. That just doesn't wash with me. So that's the other reason that I'm going to support it. But I think that by having the amendment pass on Monday, we may have gotten into a thicket that we don't want to get into with regard to serious legal questions. And of course, the on the merits, the policy of having the waivers available is a good idea in the first place. I support the motion.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's easy to raise the issue as a constitutional question, and in the words of the previous speaker, you can probably make that as a good argument, but it doesn't mean that we have to buy it as an argument. We had evidence here the other day, or words to the effect that there was some $750,000 worth of waivers last year. That translates, Mr. Speaker, roughly into somewhere in the area, as near as I could figure out, of 175 classroom teachers within the university system, classroom teacher positions, that are existing there in that budget simply to provide for these people who are attending those classes tuition-free. And Mr. Speaker, I submit that's a bad policy for the state of Alaska to pursue, especially when we've heard so much talk about budget cuts and whatnot. We rejected this same concept on Monday, Mr. Speaker, and I would urge the body to reject it again.
Representative Cotton?
Mr. Speaker, one of the members brought up a question as to whether or not the university employees' children could still take classes tuition-free. Well, of course, this amendment doesn't prohibit that, nor does it prohibit students from other states coming in and taking classes for free. Apparently, there are several different categories of people who can take classes tuition-free. This eliminates one of those many classes of people. That's the people that actually work for the university, not their families. So I think that those people can rest assured that they can continue to receive these classes for free. I think this is it's a subject that I voted for the amendment and support it, but I think it's not complete, and perhaps it should be the subject of a bill of its own.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to respond first to the representative from Kalifonsky and just ask him, as a classroom teacher, if one in the grade schools were to allow the principals and teachers to attend classes, is that going to mean that you'd have to have more teachers? Well, of course not. The people are only taking classes that are already being offered, so it does not mean that many new employees that would be theoretically hired. Secondly, the tuition, the maximum amount of the cost of the tuition waivers is $750,000. We don't know how many of the people would take the courses anyway if they weren't being offered as a fringe benefit. The question, of course, is whether we do want to encourage people who are working at the university to get a better education. I think that is something we want to offer those people. I would also concur with the comments of the last speaker from Eagle River. This only prohibits it for the employees. It doesn't affect the students at all. And finally, Mr. Speaker, one other reason that I'd like to rescind our action. The original bill was one that I could support. And Mr. Speaker, I don't want to talk about what happens to bills in the other body, so I won't. But I do believe that this is the kind of bill without the amendment that could see much broader support than it could see with this amendment in it. And I certainly would like to see the issue of term of office for members of the Board of Regents make it to the governor's desk. And I'm just concerned that things can happen if this amendment stays on.
Representative Byrne.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, just a couple of short comments here. First, I'd strongly recommend that the members vote no on the motion before us. Second, to reiterate, the principle involved here is simply, can an agency of government waive fees for the services it provides without specific statutory authorization by the legislature? Now, if the university can do it, which is an agency of government, then all the other agencies of government can do it too, and we're not necessary, and we can adjourn and go home. And third, the representative from Fairbanks provided us with information that I was unable to obtain myself, which was that approximately $750,000 of fees have been waived this past year. I don't know that that's correct, but that's what he said on the floor of this House, as I recall. As a matter of fact, I had my staff call the university to find out, what the extent of this was, and of course, we were unable to obtain any information because nobody knows anything about this up there, But the Fairbanks representative was able to find out that they had $750,000 involved. Well, now, if that's true, you divide $750,000 by, say, approximately $400, which is the fee, tuition fee, and you come up with something like 2,000 full-time students. Now, I don't know that that's correct, but that's kind of an astounding number. 2,000 full-time students. Not somebody taking a course after hours of on the job as an employee at the university, but somebody taking full-time, 2,000 of them taking full-time courses at the university for free, not authorized by the legislature. I don't know what for. I don't know where they get their authority from. I've addressed a letter to the president of the university, and I've asked him what's his authority for this. It'll be an interesting response I get. So I say vote no.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House rescind its action and failure to return the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute for House Bill 683 amended to second reading for the purpose of rescinding the adoption of Amendment Number 1? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 16 yeas, 21 nays.
The motion to rescind has failed. Without objection, I'd like to move down. This brings before us the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute for House Bill 683, amended in third reading under reconsideration. Will the clerk? The bill has been read. The bill has been read. Is there debate? Are you ready for the question? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Freeman? Representative Freeman from yes to no. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 26 yeas, 11 nays.
So the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute for House Bill 683 amended has passed the House under reconsideration. Representative Halford, is there an effective date clause? There's no effective date clause. Without objection, I'd like to move down the daily order of business to the consideration of the daily calendar. The House is still under call on the reconsideration of committee substitute for House Bill 137, Finance Amended House. Representative Halford, would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar? Representative Brown, House, please stand at ease. We're under consideration of the daily calendar. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 229 be placed at the bottom of today's calendar.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 299 will be moved to the bottom of today's calendar. Excuse me, 229 will be moved to the bottom of today's calendar. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 807 by Duncan and Miller, entitled An Act Naming the Douglas Bridge and Providing for an Effective Date. State Affairs Committee had House Bill 807 under consideration. The committee recommended it do pass. The report was signed by Metcalf, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Fanning, Abood, and Brown. I have no amendments on my desk.
At this time, I'm going to lift the call on the House. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 807 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Bill number 807, entitled An Act Naming the Douglas Bridge and Providing for an Effective Date.
Point of order. Mr. Speaker, if the call has been withdrawn, then 137 is automatically back before us.
I don't believe that's correct. House Standardese. Representative Rogers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as you pointed out during the at ease, you had said without objection we'll go onto the calendar, and like as has happened to other members, I was asleep at the switch.
Is there a debate? We have House Bill 807 before us. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Bill number 807, entitled An Act Naming the Douglas Bridge and Providing for an Effective Date.
Is there debate? Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this bill was introduced a couple of weeks ago and was reported in the Juneau Vampire Empire. And I've talked with several people in the last couple of weeks about the naming of the bridge, especially local people here, and there doesn't seem to be any objection to naming it the Douglas Bridge. And it's good to know that citizens in the state are not willing to name a structure like a bridge after any Joe Sixpack who comes into town. And I will vote in favor of this bill.
Representative Cotton?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, could somebody tell me what the name of the old bridge crossing Gastineau Channel was?
Representative Duncan?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The old bridge was named the Douglas Bridge, 1935.
Is there further debate? The question is, shall House Bill 807 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Representative Abood, have you voted?
The clerk, oh, sir, my machine is
Clerk, please open the roll so that Representative Abood may vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Metcalf?
Yes, no.
Representative Metcalf from yes to no. Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 31 yeas, 3 nays.
House Bill 807 has passed the House. Representative Halford?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date of House Bill 807.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This brings us, without objection then, we'll move back to the... Apparently there are still some members missing. Representative House Bill Standardies. Without objection, I'm going to move back to the... The question of shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House, pass the House, which is before us in third reading, pass the House under reconsideration. I'm going to place a call in the House. So the members, will the Sergeant Arm please instruct the page to find the missing members? Is there a debate on the committee substitute for House Bill 137, Finance Amended House? Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd oppose the bill as it is. We've failed to pass an amendment which would prohibit or which would take away the corporate contributions. We failed to delay the effective date until the end of this fiscal year, which I think means that the bill tends to helping hurt non-incumbents, which I think is a mistake. And I think that the failure of the other amendment offered by Mr. Cotton also is a serious defect, so I'd urge a no vote.
We are under call. I ask the House to stand at ease while the call is satisfied. House, please come back to order. Question is, shall Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House, pass the House? This time I'm going to lift the call. Is there further debate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Hurlburt. Representative Hurlburt from no to yes. Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 21 yeas, 15 nays.
So Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House, has passed the House under reconsideration. This brings us back to consideration of the daily calendar. Oh, there is an effective date. Excuse me. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move the effective date clause.
There is objection. The question before us is the effective date clause on the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House, which is before us in third reading under reconsideration, is passed under reconsideration. Representative Barnes? Will the member in the back of the room please get in the front of the room? Are you ready for the question? The question is the adoption of the effective date clause for the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 137, amended House. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 23 yeas, 14 nays.
The effective date clause has failed. This brings us back to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill number 188 by the State Affairs Committee, entitled, An Act Naming the North Slope Secondary Highway Bridge across the Yukon River in honor of Edward L. Patton and providing for an effective date. This was carried over from last year, and I have an amendment by Rogers on my desk. It would be amendment number 3.
Will the clerk please read the amendment?
The amendment by Rogers is to page 1, lines 7 and 8. Delete Edward L. Patton, insert Yukon Niquain. Page 1, lines 10 through 23, delete section 1. Page 1, line 25, delete E.L. Patton Bridge. Insert Yukon Niquain. Page 1, line 26 through 27, delete E.L. Patton Bridge. Insert Yukon Niquain.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the House return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Object.
We are in second reading.
We're in second reading after being in third reading and reconsideration and returning the rules last year. Be a real surprise to me. Well, that's fine then. I move the.
No.
Move the amendment.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection, Representative Rogers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we spent some time on this bill last year, and looks like we might have to spend a little on it again this year. Mr. Speaker, the amendment to name the bridge Yukon Niquain would be to adopt the name that's being used by the residents who live closest to the bridge, the people who live up and just upriver and just downriver from the bridge, and would it's in the Kuchin dialect. It means Yukon River Bridge, for those who would be interested. The sign would be placed at the north and south end. Mr. Speaker, I have a list here of the other bridges in the state of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, there are 884 bridges that are cataloged by the Department of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, of the 884 bridges, 881 are named either for the body of water that they cross or for whatever's on the other side. Mr. Speaker, there are only 3 that are named after anything other than the body of water that they cross or whatever's on the other side, as is the case on the Douglas Bridge, for example. Mr. Speaker, one of those is the Brotherhood Bridge in Juneau. One is the O'Connell Bridge in Sitka, which is named after a former mayor of Sitka, and one is on the Kenai Peninsula, named after someone that fell off the bridge. Mr. Speaker, I'm concerned that we would start taking the 881 bridges that are named after a natural feature or what's on the other side and come up with a new thing. Instead of a citation for someone, that we would be able to name a bridge after them. Mr. Speaker, we could, you know, the bridge over Abercrombie Creek is named the Abercrombie Creek Bridge. Mr. Speaker, I believe that we should continue the DOT's practice of naming it after that. I think that to do otherwise would create a precedent that might find us on the floor of the House fairly often naming bridges. For that reason, I would strongly urge the adoption of the amendment to use the native dialect name for that bridge as the official name of the bridge.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, what happens if we don't pass this bill? What's the name of the bridge then?
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, my understanding is that it would be the English name, the Yukon River Bridge.
Is there further debate? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 3 to Senate Bill 188? Representative Vasca?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would like to speak in favor of naming the bridge the Yukon. I don't have the amendment in front of me. Sorry. Mr. Speaker, I would like to speak in favor of naming the bridge using the name of the Kuchin language. It's in a place that's located on the Yukon River. It's the only bridge so far that has been built over the Yukon River, designating that. earlier in a different discussion dealing with House Bill 188, I said that we shouldn't name bridges, at least this particular bridge here in Juneau, after any Joe Sixpack who came to Alaska for any length of time. Mr. Speaker, I think it's incumbent on us to start recognizing that Alaska has a great heritage. Alaska has many great peoples and have had them for a long time. We should start recognizing that naming bridges should recognize the heritage that is in Alaska, not after some construction engineer who gave the Alaska State Legislature and the residents of Alaska a lot of problems in his short, very short history in the state of Alaska. It's problematic to me that this United States, this state of Alaska, is ignoring local traditions. It's problematic to me that this body is willing to not listen to what maybe local people want in this state. Instead, we name it after some construction engineer from outside who's not even living in the state of Alaska anymore. We've had that problem since the Russians came to this now state, since the Canadians came to this territory, and since the United States citizens came to this territory. At some point, I think this legislature has to recognize that, yes, there were other people, and there continue to be other people who speak different languages, who have different traditions, who have different histories than the majority population at the present time. Sure, we tie ourselves into corporate agreements for doing such a simple thing as naming a bridge, the only bridge that happens to span the Yukon River, the second largest river in the whole United States, the third largest river in the continent. We choose to name it after somebody who constructed something so temporary. I don't know what goes through the minds of people who want to name the bridge E.L. Patton Bridge. I mean, last year when this first came up, I had to find out who E.L. Patton was. You know, a construction engineer. Now, I don't have a particular problem with naming bridges for people who do great things, but I think it's incumbent on this legislature to start recognizing that there's a history, that it does exist, and that giving names is a recognition of that. You know, let's stop naming mountains after former presidents from different states. Let's stop naming rivers after construction engineers or bridges after construction engineers who've been in the state for a very short time. Let's start recognizing what we have here in Alaska, and let's start telling the world that Alaska exists and it's as diverse as the different people here, the different cultures, the different languages. This might seem like a small gesture to be naming it the Yukon-Niquan Bridge. Mr. Speaker, in fact, it is a small gesture. I think we should recognize that and make that gesture to the people who live in that region.
Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to more or less support the amendment here in naming the bridge the Yukon Bridge. There's been some reference to a bridge that was named in Sitka for a man by the name of John O'Connell. John O'Connell spent 20-some years in public service in the city of Sitka, and it was the wishes of the people of Sitka that that bridge be named that. And that's why I feel that to name a bridge after an individual whose contribution to the state is limited to a project, I do not think is proper.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, just to follow up on that, I would point out it seems that the genesis of the bill as it is now didn't come from the interior of Alaska. It came from one city, Mr. Speaker. If the Anchorage delegation were to request a bridge in the Anchorage area be named after someone, I'd have no objection to that. But, Mr. Speaker, this is not something that was requested by the residents of interior Alaska. The bridge is in our region of the state.
Is there further debate? The question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 3 to Senate Bill 188. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Cotton? Representative Cotton from no to yes. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 18 yeas, 19 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 3. Representative Rogers?
May we brief at ease?
House, please stand at ease. Order. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 4 by Representative Vasca, page 1, lines 7 to 8, delete Edward L. Patton, insert Chief Andrew Isaac. Page 1, lines 10 through 23, delete Section 1. Page 1, line 25, delete E. L. Patton, insert Chief Andrew Isaac. Page 1, line 26 through 27, delete E. L. Patton, insert Chief Andrew Isaac.
Representative Vasca?
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
There is objection. I'm going to place a call on the House. Sergeant-at-Arms please advise the pages to find the missing members. Representative Vasca, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if we can't name the bridge, the Yukon Pequon River, or bridge, then we should start looking at people in the state of Alaska who've been lifelong residents, who've contributed to their people, both locally and on a statewide level, who will be remembered in the state of Alaska by people with a tradition different than the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. It's unfortunate that we have to, that we're, the legislature is designated to put names on such temporary items in the state, but it seems to be such magnitude that the whole business community comes to the fore to name the bridge after a businessman, a construction engineer. We should start using people in the state of Alaska who are lifelong residents, who will continue to contribute to the history and tradition of Alaska. Chief Andrew Isaac has done a lot for the Kuchin people. The Alaska Natives in the state recognize that in the last several years. There was a huge corporate battle, for instance, for a portrait of Chief Andrew Isaac 3 years ago. A portrait done by an artist from Bethel, of Chief Andrew Isaac, acknowledging that he has a long history, that his people had a long history. Mr. Speaker, I haven't contacted whether Chief Andrew Isaac wants a bridge named after him. It would seem to me that such a temporary man-made item would cause him some problems, because he thinks of other things. He thinks of other things besides concrete and steel crossing the whole state of Alaska. He thinks of other things different than a 48-inch diameter pipeline crossing what he considers to be his country. And I assure you, I agree with him that it is his country. This legislature should recognize that the United States government did in its Land Claims Settlement Act in 1971. Mr. Speaker, I ask you, when is this legislature going to start recognizing Native peoples in the state of Alaska or other Alaskans, not part-time residents, not someone who comes up for 6 years, makes the big bucks and leave, but people who've contributed to Alaskan society and will continue to contribute to Alaskan society by their very existence, not only now, but their past, their history. That will be recorded. That is already recorded. The painting I talked about earlier hangs in the Doyon building as a tribute to Chief Andrew Isaac. And I presume that they would be more than grateful for the gesture that this legislature would give by naming the first bridge to span the Yukon River after him. And I urge this legislature to vote for this amendment.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, one of the most amazing men I've ever met in my life is the subject of the amendment. Chief Andrew Isaac is the last traditional chief of an Alaskan Native group in the state, it's my understanding. He is the chief of the Crow Band of the Athabascan Indians. And he has been for a very, very long time. I have had the good fortune to know him and to work with him in some contexts. And he's a very tough man. He's the sort of man that has the strength of character that all Alaskans would be proud of and identify with, whether they are from the Caucasian transplanted culture of the lower 48 and have been here a generation or so, or of any one of the Alaskan Native groups, or of the other groups that are now within the state of Alaska and have been here a long time. He's a very tough man, and his toughness is matched by the toughness of the territory that this bridge is built within. And I would think that this sort of thing is very, very appropriate, much more appropriate than naming the bridge after someone who was the chief executive officer of a corporation that the state of Alaska now charges mismanaged the construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline in cases pending before the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. I'm wondering if we pass this, if the findings in Section 1 are going to be cited by opposing counsel in that case. We're congratulating him for doing a good job on the one hand, and then we're actually challenging the efficacy of his management and the matters that through at least responsibility and delegation, the ultimate responsibility was his. I think that Chief Andrew has had the ultimate responsibility for many things. He's a fine man. You can't even say what town he's from, Mr. Speaker. If you said Chief Andrew Isaac of Lake Mansfield Village, you'd be wrong. If you said Chief Andrew Isaac of Dot Lake, you'd be wrong. Because he has a home in many different communities, according to the traditions of his people. He has a home everywhere he has a son, and he has many sons. Mr. Speaker, that is the sort of man that this bridge should be named after, if it is to be named after a man at all.
Is there further debate? Representative Byrne. Is there further debate? This time I'm going to lift the call of on the House. And the question before the body is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 4 to Senate Bill 188? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative O'Connell? Representative O'Connell from yes to no. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 15 yeas, 22 nays.
Amendment number 4 is failed. Representative Rogers?
Brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. I'm going to place a call on the House. Will clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment number 5 by Rogers to Senate Bill 188. Page 1, line 728, delete Edward L. Patton, insert John Sackett. Page 1, lines 10 to 23, delete section 1. Page 1, line 25, delete E. L. Patton, insert John Sackett. Page 1, line 26 through 27, delete E. L. Patton, insert John Sackett.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment. Object.
There is objection. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, it was stated by the proponent of the last amendment that he wasn't sure that the person that Chief Isaac, Andrew Isaac, did want a bridge named after him. I did speak with the member here, and he certainly prefers it to the name that's being suggested in the bill. And I believe that John Sackett's had a long and distinguished career representing the people in the area of the bridge. And I think that it would be much more appropriate to name the bridge after Senator Sackett than after a non-resident who came here and botched a project.
Is there further debate? This time I'm going to lift the call on the House. The question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 5 to Senate Bill 188? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 13 yeas, 24 nays.
Amendment number 5 has failed. At this time, I'm going to replace the call on the House. Are there further amendments?
I have no further amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Halford. I'm going to lift the call of the House this time. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 188 be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Representative Moss.
I lift my call, Mr. Speaker.
Call has been lifted. Is there further debate? The question is, there is a motion to advance from second to third reading. There is objection. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Malone?
Yes to no.
Representative Malone from yes to no. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 22 yeas, 13 nays.
So the motion to advance Senate Bill 188 from second to third reading has failed. Excuse me. It has failed. Will the clerk please read the next item on the day's calendar?
House Joint Resolution Number 12, proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to legislative sessions. The Judiciary Committee had House Joint Resolution Number 12 under consideration. The committee recommended it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 12, entitled Proposing an Amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska Limiting the Length of Regular Sessions of the Legislature, and recommended it do pass. The report was signed by Representative Barnes, Chairman, concurred in by Anderson, Buchholz, Phillips, Meekins, and O'Connell. Freeman signed no recommendation. The State Affairs Committee had House Joint Resolution Number 12 under consideration. The committee recommended do pass with attached amendments. The report was signed by Representative Metcalf, concurred in by Abood and Fanning. Brown and Miller signed, do not pass. I have further amendments on my desk.
Representative Hoffman.
Could we have an ease, please?
House, please stand at ease.